Hello and welcome to the Tantra for Gay Men podcast, hosted by Jason and Ingo Tantra. Here we're exploring spirituality and personal growth through the practice of Tantra, the body, energy and sex. Hello there and welcome to episode 15 of the Tantra for Gay Men podcast. Today, Ingo and I look at the slightly more serious topic of how sexual abuse can affect your sex life. And I talk about today, it's kind of quite a deep, serious topic today. I talk about that personally and also how Tantra helped me in this journey. And I'm really sharing all of this in service to you in that this might be helpful to you. So I hope, this is helpful to you. And I want to say enjoy, but it's not an enjoyable thing. But I hope this is a useful podcast for you. Take care now. Thank you. Bye-bye. Hello, Ingo.
Hello, Jason.
Here we are at episode 15. Okay. Today we're dealing with actually quite a serious topic.
Yes.
And a more serious topic. So I think a lot of the topics we've done before are very discussional about Tantra. Mm-hmm. And today is kind of a representation of people that come to see us or people's backgrounds and histories that they bring to Tantra. Mm-hmm. You know, looking for answers, looking for healing. So today's question is, how does the damage of sexual abuse get in the way of a happy sex life?
People who come to us to work with us, we have realized, over the years that no one comes to Tantra without a specific reason.
Yes.
And more often than not, this reason is to heal from something. Mm. And very often that is, you know, we talked about sexual indoctrination on other episodes, but sometimes it's sexual abuse. Mm. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that I guess you and me have witnessed incredible transformation in people where they completely change their relationship to those experiences, and that's I guess why we are talking about this topic today.
Well, I think one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the topic today was because I wanted to communicate that actually Tantra can be supportive in terms of one, coming to terms with things that have happened, and two, that Tantra can be helpful along the journey of healing. I think Tantra can play a part in that.
Yeah. Shall we dive right in?
Well, I wanted to, just before we dive right in, I wanted to, I guess, just talk personally.
Yeah.
So for me, I don't really like labels of classing myself as a survivor of sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that the sexual abuse and mental abuse that I experienced, suffered in my childhood, and I think also the bereavement of a parent in my childhood, is the reason why I teach Tantra today. I think, you know, I've been a output, you know, what I'm doing today is an output of what I've experienced and my own healing journey. And I remember sex in my 20s was excruciatingly difficult. Mm-hmm. Actually, even my first sexual experiences, I feel like I was a little bit of a late bloomer.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really have sex with men until I was 19. And I think also the other thing I would say is that the way the world is now is completely different to the way the world was in the 1990s. And I feel like I have to say that because people feel very much more adulted at a much younger age than I remember growing up. So I remember at the age of 14 and 15 still going out to play or out with my friends. And, you know, we would roam fields, build dens, you know, ponds with water.
We were still children at that
age. Yeah. And, you know, we weren't expected to adult up to like the age of 16. And, you know, I experienced sexual abuse from the age of 9 all the way through to probably the age of 14 and 15. And it was weird because I was just going to say I didn't know it was sexual abuse. It's weird because I think I blocked a lot of stuff out and I've blanked off a lot of stuff. That's why I hesitate. But it wasn't till the age of 16 that I decided to tell my parents, actually, this person was sexually abusing me for these number of years. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I had really supportive parents to help me, I guess, just express what had happened and to make it okay that I didn't have to hold this secret any longer. And that, you know, that was a part of me I didn't need to hide. And the utter confusion between the sexual abuse I experienced and being gay. And those two were also very messed up. And also, the other thing I want to say here is the information that was available just was non-existent. Like, the internet didn't exist then. The internet didn't exist for another 5 years later. So topics about sexual abuse, topics about sexuality, they just didn't exist. They just were inaccessible. You know, the only place I remember at that age getting information of any kind was going to a library, you know, library and books. And, you know, there weren't books on those topics. So it just kind of was undealt with and unknown and kind of un-whatever. And, you know, my mother, I'm grateful for so many things about my mother. She really supported me to start to talk and to check through and to ask questions about what had happened and, you know, where it had happened. And I think there was also for her a huge amount of disbelief. But her love, her support at the age of 16 really enabled me not to fall off a cliff, literally. And then at the age of 18, I was able to come back round to the world and say, actually, I'm gay. And I didn't feel safe to have a, and I use the word safe, I didn't feel safe to have a sexual, God, my first sexual incidents were horrendous, but I didn't feel safe to have sex until I was 19. And I would say that from the age of 19 all the way through to maybe my early mid-30s, my sex was deeply impacted by the sexual abuse that I experienced. And it would show up in different ways, but ways that I wasn't conscious that I was being affected. So the biggest thing for me was just an absolute freeze state in my body, like a real frozen state. And it would be nigh on impossible for me to let people physically interact or physically touch me without me feeling frozen and rigid and utterly stuck. I remember that going on. I also remember kind of the art of cruising. So again, in this time, you know, Grindr didn't exist. The way that men found men to have sex with was there used to be personal columns in the back of gay like magazines, like the you call them, the gay classified ads. Yes. That would be one way that you would meet people. The other way would be down the pub, in the gay bars, and the other way was cruising and gay saunas. And I remember that cruising used to feel secret and hush-hush because it was illegal and would happen in places where police would be actually, you know, looking for people having sex to arrest them, prosecute them and send them to jail. So there was that living with danger and living with a big secret. And I think that also spoke to a unresolved part of me in the sexual abuse, is that it became like habitualized and normalized, that it was a secret, that it was something that wasn't spoken about. And that, and so I think cruising, because that was also secretive in nature, kind of just normalized the secretive nature. And I think, you know, one of my biggest learnings or gifts of my marriage to you, like I trust you implicitly, Ingo. I really trust you implicitly. And to be able to remove that veil of secrecy and be mm-hmm. utterly honest with you. And I've never been met with anything other than love, mm-hmm. anything other than a yes, that's okay, my darling. It's okay to want that, to have that, to explore that. And you have, you know, at every opportunity given me everything that has helped me work through that need for secrecy. Like, I've never had any secrets from you. I've always been mm-hmm. utterly honest. And even where times where my toes will curl that I've got to tell you something, that's never ever been met with anything other than love. So I think there was also then like this part of secrecy around sex and cruising, and I just didn't know how to have sex. I really, because again, the other thing that I missed in sexual abuse was, you know, like how most teenagers experiment with typically members of the opposite yeah. sex,
yes.
and they kind of find a way to, well, I never had that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't, one, I was a really regressed, introverted, shut down teenager that I just remember just feeling like I was in survival mode from the age of 9 to the age of 16. Mm-hmm. I just remember feeling utterly in survival mode. I've got really big blank patches where I just don't remember stuff, and I remember feeling highly uncomfortable in my own skin,
mm-hmm.
highly uncomfortable as to who I was, and that went through into my 20s. Like, I look at when I first came out at the age of 19 18 19, from that age to the age of 22 23, I was really uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable in how I dressed, uncomfortable in how I looked, just uncomfortable with me. And I had some really great friends at that time that without their support, I'm not sure I would have ended up where I did, because I had some really supportive friends. I used to belong to a youth group in Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a life ring, an absolute life ring, because
yeah,
I could
yeah, yeah.
meet other men. Well, I say men, other members my age.
Some of which are, you know, our friends today.
Yes,
still.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's why.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a real backbone and support that carried me through. And yeah, as I said, my sex. So before you, I had one mm-hmm. other long-term 10-year relationship. And then before that, I'd had other sexual encounters, boyfriends. And I just never felt comfortable in sex in my 20s. I never felt comfortable. It was always, there was always bits that I felt like I felt, I might even cry at this point, I felt injured. You know, like a bird, you know, if it accidentally hits a building or a window, it breaks a wing and it's kind of like limping and the wing is trying to fly and the wing is like damaged and dropping off. That was how I felt inside going into sex, because I felt disabled in some way. Yeah. And I felt like I couldn't be present and I couldn't meet the other person, and that I just felt utterly inhibited. I felt rigid. I felt frozen. I felt stuck. I felt I just wanted to run. And yet I wanted connection and intimacy more than anything. And I just had no idea how to achieve that. And then I had my first relationship before you. And that was 10 years. And I never was in love with my partner. One of the reasons I was with that person was because that was it's going to sound awful. That was almost like the best I thought I could get, because I thought that's what it was. It wasn't till I met you, when I utterly fell in love with you from the minute of seeing you, I didn't really know what being in love was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know, you know, yeah, what being in love was and what being in real collaborative relationship, like I feel you and I have a completely collaborative relationship in so many different ways, not just what we do in Tantra, but in everything else that we are together. And I'd never had that before. And so my sex in that long-term relationship, well, I'd entered into an agreement of monogamy. And there was one time in that time that I didn't have sex for 2 years. Mm. And I used to have a wank and it wouldn't even touch the utter hunger. Like, you know, you talk about like nails down a wall. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, it was just excruciatingly painful not being met physically. And to be honest, the sex that we shared together wasn't great. It was really over quickly. I think my partner at that time wasn't comfortable being a gay man. And I think, you know, if you look at Freud's ideas about same things attracting, I think that,
yeah,
you know, we really attracted each other and sex was not satisfying. It was not great. It was not, you know, I was utterly inhibited, and you know, I think my partner at the time wanted it to be over as quickly as possible. So what I'm trying to say here is that the sexual abuse I experienced in my childhood really impacted me through my late teens, early 20s, all the way into my mid 30s until I met Tantra.
Yes, and I was going, so what I really, really hear is how this abuse almost took away a whole developmental stage.
Yes, right? Completely.
A whole developmental stage in which you would, under like normal circumstances, have learned how to be with your body.
Yes.
What your needs are, how it is possible to express these needs, how it's possible to get these needs met.
Yeah.
And instead, what I hear is that this was just like eclipsed by that freeze, uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Feeling
inhibited. And
basically, you missed a whole developmental stage almost.
There. Yes.
That's what it must have felt like.
Yes.
And yeah, you were just starting to talk about this. What would interest me, what I hear is that you had spoken it through with your mother. She was absolutely supportive, but you had not had until what, mid-20s, late-20s, any context to really work through it.
Yes.
Like I don't know, psychotherapy or something. Well, and more importantly, maybe even to embark on a path where you could actually almost do that developmental stage and discover what your real sexuality is. Is that correct?
Well, and that didn't happen till I met Tantra. But
yeah.
Let me go back a little bit more. So from the age of 18, and this is also quite normal, a normal phenomena. It's very normal for people that have experienced any kind of trauma in their life to develop spiritual gifts. I don't know if you know that. Really like very normal that, you know, people that develop mediumship, people that develop psychic abilities, people that develop... And the reason being, I perceive, and again, personal view, is that when you're experiencing trauma, there's something about disappearing. There's something about leaving what's going on and being somewhere else, anywhere else than in your body. And I think that pushes people into developing psychic gifts, probably as places for safety, survival. And I certainly know that of myself. So whilst I've got that narrative going on, at the same time, I had then a spiritual narrative going on. But just before I mention that, the reason for sharing all of this today, really so personally, is not because I'm looking to achieve anything for myself in sharing that, but as we'll come on to in a bit, what I really want to share is how Tantra was pivotal in that healing process. For me in my life, it seems to be each time I've experienced something or I've learned something that I seem to put that to use in service of others.
Yeah.
So at the age of 18, I, with my mother and my sister, actually that was at the age of about 14, 15, we used to go to the Spiritualist Church in Melksham, and the Spiritualist Church is a place for practicing mediums and all different forms of mediumship and also spiritual healing. So I probably spent about 4 years in closed circles developing mediumship skills, developing psychic skills, and then at the age of 18, I then started training as a spiritual healer. I was an approved or qualified member of the National Federation of Spiritual Healers. And I did like a 3-4 year accreditation process. So whilst that was going on one level, and on the other level was my spiritual journey. And the reason for sharing this with you is the day that I qualified as a spiritual healer, I used to also go to psychic fairs and do readings for people. Yeah. And then I got
to the day you qualified, what happened?
I never had another client.
Say, that's interesting.
I never had another, it was like, I feel like, and again, this is probably another podcast, that life had had a certain predeterminedness to it. Yeah. And that I needed to learn about energy. I needed to learn about healing energies. I needed to learn about spiritual energetic realms. And then what happened next is I then started to work on a telephone helpline. This is how old I am. There was a telephone helpline called Male Survivors of Sexual Abuse Helpline. And for about 2-3 years... I used to work on a phone line every Thursday, listening to calls for men talking about situations of sexual abuse for the very first time. Because another fucked up layer of sexual abuse was feeling guilty about it as well.
Yes. Is it this, what we hear from many people who come to us, it's this... I feel guilty because I actually felt pleasure, and I'm confused because there was part of me that liked that pleasure. Do you see what I mean?
Or that the pleasure felt good. I wouldn't say liked. I would say the pleasure felt good. And that in itself can be a head fuck.
Exactly, yeah.
So what I didn't discover till years later was one of the reasons why I was doing this phone line was to try and ease the guilt that I felt for any pleasure that I felt during the sexual abuse. And there's kind of a fucked upness to it. A real fucked up around, Jason, you were fucking 9 or 10, you know.
Yeah.
And just, as I said, the fucked up nature of that. What that then also led to was this: as soon as I started working on the telephone helpline, I felt vastly underskilled.
Yes.
And that then led me into a 5-year training as a counsellor at Bristol University, because I wanted to be skilled in helping people. I didn't want to cause any harm. And that then also led on to working in the prison in Bristol, seeing inmates face to face. I did that for a couple of years. And then I also worked for a charity in Bristol, working as a counsellor, working with general members of the general public around stories or experiences of abuse.
What interests me in this process, working with survivors of sexual abuse, I guess, in the prison, but also on the helpline, and also going through your own training and I guess through your own therapy during that training, right? How did that change your relationship to, let's say, the damage done through your sexual abuse?
I don't think it did.
Ah, really?
Yeah, because, well, did it? I don't know, maybe 50-50, but let me explain. So the method we use in our Tantra retreats called spiritual inquiry that I created is heavily influenced. I would say 60% influenced by different psychotherapeutic models. But the stages of inquiry that we've developed is probably the first time. They were never mapped out in psychotherapy. I've mapped those out. And the stages of inquiry is basically the stages of healing. And stage one that we talk about is being able to tell the story.
Yes.
So a lot of the counselling I was doing in the prison and in the voluntary charity and on the phone line was around building a trusting relationship. So about building a trusting relationship, and in that, being able to tell the story of the abuse for the very often for the very first time, that would take months. Every week, week on week, 1 hour, for somebody to feel safe to actually start to communicate, to build a relationship with that person, would take months. And that in itself was already a huge milestone. And I think when we teach Tantra and people talk about experiences, because they're typically, you know, what they're sharing isn't often as maybe traumatic as, you know, entrenched sexual abuse, although that does happen.
It does happen.
But normally when people arrive on our doorstep, they've done some work around it and they can articulate. These are people that have kept secrets for decades. And they were utterly stuck and frozen and rigid and inhibited. And just telling the story for the first time was a weight. And then the second stage we developed was then starting to name feelings around that. That in itself, and this is why I, you know, am passionate about people doing talking therapies as part of a healing journey of sexual abuse, because you need to be able to tell the story to a point where, and you might have something to say about this in terms of a healing journey, but we talk about layers and talk about layers of an onion. And I'm looking at this statue next to us and it's got spirals. So, you know, like the first time when you start to talk about a trauma, you're telling the story. Oh, and this then happened. And then this person did this. And then this happened. And when people are talking about that, they're actually reliving that experience. And then it's like, okay, once they're, they feel like they've told the story. As we know, the next part on is, well, how do you start talking about the feelings associated with that? And particularly if it's trauma, people are going to have very blank times where they've disappeared when the trauma was taking place. And so there's blank parts, and then there's a whole heap of very confused, sometimes my own words, very fucked up emotions, a mess. A real mess that feels yucky and sick and grey and pooey and sticky, and to work through of feelings. And then, you know, as we know, the next stage on from that, well, that processing of feelings can take some people years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, years. And I know for myself, so in my training as a counsellor, I was in personal therapy for probably 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I worked with different therapists at different times. And I worked through a lot of my childhood, both in the bereavement of a parent, sexual abuse and mental abuse, and also family systems and structures, because I wanted to understand why. But up to this point, let me just say, I'd still not dealt with me and my relationship with sex.
I was fascinated when I was asking you this question. Where, at which point and through what did you really start to change your relationship to your sex, to really work through that freeze and all of that? And with, and did I hear right that you basically said with all that therapy that only did so much?
Well, I say all it did, and let's not make that insignificant.
No, it doesn't sound insignificant, but because you said, oh, no, it didn't.
Yeah, is that... it didn't at all. What it enabled me to do was to tell the story.
Okay,
yeah. To understand my feelings, and that is the first time in my life that I'd really given myself the gift of the space to really understand how I felt and where I was in each of this all happening.
Yes.
And then, as I said, the third stage was then about understanding the wider context.
You know, family system.
That's it. And why people were reacting, why the abuser was doing the abuse and all of these kinds of things. But up to this point, I had done nothing in terms of my body, in terms of my sex, in terms of anything to do with me other than my emotional body.
Yes, this is the fascinating thing that I hear from you, is that you did all of this work, and I guess this is probably the type of work that people do when they go to a psychotherapist to work through sexual abuse.
Yes.
What you mentioned, understand what happened, tell the story, understand your emotions, understand the systemic element and the dynamics in your life behind that. And what I find fascinating, and this probably now goes into the impact of Tantra in your life and my, is that you're still saying, you know, I did all these things, yet there was a vast realm still that was untouched by that. And you just said, almost like relearning sex, right? The practical relationship to your body, is it that?
Well, again, it wasn't till I was nearing the completion of my psychotherapy training that I came across Tantra. I remember seeing it advertised a weekend in Brighton.
Yeah.
And I went on that, and then when I met you, the following...
Which was the next retreat after that.
I think I went in the September, October, and then on the New Year's...
On the New Year's retreat.
In Germany.
Yes.
And that then led to 2 years of Tantra training in Germany.
2005.
In different retreats.
Yeah.
So when I met Tantra, it was two things. It was fucking terrifying. It was probably one of the most difficult things I have ever done in my life, because when I walked into the Tantra room, I thought everybody wanted to take something from me that I wasn't ready to give. And I went into the room and I judged everybody who was fit, who wasn't fit. And I was scared. I was scared that I was entering into practices where things would be stolen, taken, raped from me. And I lived with that fear. And yet when I was able to get over those parts and let go into, say, a multi-orgasmic practice... I had some of the most profound spiritual experiences of my life. So for me, it was the duality of fucking trauma and just knowing how to navigate that and some of the most profound spiritual experiences of my life. And let me just talk to the first one a second. I think the biggest thing I learned in Tantra in my early days was about trust, was about how to enter into a intimate practice. And I don't necessarily mean sexual, but it may have been. But what I do mean is intimate practice and relearning that somebody didn't want to take something from me. And that tells me how much harm that I'd had in the sexual abuse. Because if my default position is, what are you wanting to take from me? And there would be a level of hostility from me. And this is in my mid-30s. That kind of gives some clue as to the damage that had been done, given that that was my default position of, what do you fucking want to take from me? And I remember feeling hugely hostile. And I talk about what I call my fuck-off barrier. So when I started Tantra, I would have what I would call my fuck-off barrier, which was probably about 3 meters. And if anybody came close into that, I would fucking kill them. I would move into needing to defend my... Well, in a Tantra workshop, Ingo, where there's, you know, angels and spirits and you know, plinky-plonky music, and I'm there in a mode of hostility... That I found really, really painful.
I remember our first retreat and some of these moments. I remember seeing you in that. And what I wanted to say is that, you know, in especially in a beginner's group, like that group... Everyone is there for a reason, and everyone comes there carrying so much stuff, and they are carrying their projections and possibly other traumas, sexual traumas, and acting in ways that are, you know, not quite aware of of everything that's going on yet. And I remember how Tantra... What I wanted to say, what blew me away about Tantra is that it's so ritualized.
Yes.
So, for example, you were saying a multi-orgasmic massage. Well, the fact that it's so ritualized for me, it can actually contain all of these things because it's ritualized. Now we do this and then we do that. You can't just... you can't just do whatever you want. And this being so ritualized creates a kind of safe space in which you can, no matter which trauma you have, you can actually relearn almost sexual activity as something that can be safe.
Yes.
And I found that... especially when I saw you in that context, I found that incredibly powerful about Tantra, that we are not, you know, it's we are not just throwing ourselves into an orgy where everything is unhinged and everyone can just project their whatever trauma and stuff and needs onto the group by interacting, but actually we are entering a ritual where it's very, very, very clear that we are acting from a place of awareness, and that it's very prescribed and safe in that way.
Yes, safe.
And that kind of what I'm saying is that the container that Tantra offers.
Yes.
For me, seeing you in that I don't know if that was your experience, but it seems to open up a space where you can retrain yourself and actually have experiences in which sexual activity feels safe.
Well, I must say, it didn't feel safe at the time.
Yes.
Well, when I say didn't felt safe, it felt fucking terrifying.
Yes.
Because I felt confronted with everything I'd not dealt with in the 10, 20 years before. And I felt confronted with myself and with my trauma in a way that I've never felt before. But the space must have felt safe enough. So what you're saying must have felt so, because otherwise I would have left.
Yes, but and you I were didn't. Actually able to face that, right?
And we made, you know, we both made some of our best friends at that time.
Oh, yeah, totally.
The other big thing that I learned as well in that time, so not just that, so you're saying that the structure and the containment provided a level of safety, yes, and that in itself was hugely helpful. Mm-hmm. The other thing that was hugely helpful was the community. So we talked about in episode 14 about the camaraderie of a fellow tantrics. I'm not sure what the plural is. But there was something about these other men. And I really had to do a lot of work on my own judgments of these men. I used to like, oh my God, at that point, I used to put people in very rigid boxes. And that was then how I was relate to them. But then the way that I had been, I categorized them, and then I find myself in a tantric practice with them, that didn't match the box that I put them in. And so there was a lot of head fuck around undoing the categorization, and the categorization was another form of trying to feel safe and that I had control. And I think that was the other biggest healing and learning that I did. So I learned how to say no, and I learned how to regulate. I also learned how to be intimate, not always necessarily sexually, but intimate, i.e. cuddles, to show affection to men that I may not typically find attractive, and to really work on just being myself, feeling safe enough to actually not be myself, but find out who I actually was, and to feel my identity as me, because I'd always been, my spiritual path and the sexual part of me had felt deeply damaged, and Tantra enabled me to bring both of those together in alignment. And as I said, when it worked, it was massively profound. I had some of the most amazing spiritual experiences of my life at the peak of my sexual energy. And I was so motivated by those experiences that then led to us teaching over 19 years. And I'm quite well aware that, you know, the shadow sides of teaching. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you facilitate a group, it's a very safe place to be. And I appreciate that I may be in some way still maintaining a level of safety.
Because we as space holders choose not to interact sexually
ever with
our students.
It's a no. But what we have done and what I have done is continually worked on that in my private life.
I'm just
laughing because there's something coming up for me soon that has that quality to it.
Yeah.
Where I keep putting myself in spaces to relearn who I really am beyond the trauma. And I think that is what you and I can provide to people in Tantra, Ingo. This is what we've done many, many times. But I don't think Tantra is the whole journey. You know, as we talked about, for me, it was a blend of psychotherapy and then a blend of Tantra. I think Tantra can be massively helpful in the embodiment healing that's required, and remind you of who you really are as a spiritual being.
So basically, what you are saying, or what your journey was, shows that, as you said, even 10 years of therapy training,
yep.
and going
and
through
being
all
in
of
therapy
that, and being in therapy, even those 10 years, they had there were layers that they couldn't touch for the very reason that
yes.
there was no, call it training field or playground,
no physicality
to make experiences, yep. to learn directly from these experiences, interacting sexually, sensually, intimately with people.
Yep.
And that basically, yeah, I remember you saying after our first Tantra retreat together, you said something like, wow, as someone who has had to come to terms with sexual abuse, this thing, Tantra, is actually the continuation almost of a psychotherapeutic journey that I've been through by other means into the more experiential, and to learn from new experiences and to relearn these things.
Well, and I think this is one thing. Let's not underestimate what the gift that you and I have brought to the field of Tantra, because I feel that the Tantra we experienced certainly did not have the psychotherapeutic support.
It had the experiential playground.
Yes.
But I would say that the psychotherapeutic support, not psychotherapeutic, but the support in that context mainly happened through this tightly knit group of tantric friends.
But the provider of that Tantra, that really was not...
It was not in a psychotherapeutically held in the way that you and me, you know,
well,
nowadays...
Well, let me get to that bit. But the thing that was missing for me in that was people would have these profound experiences and then were essentially told to go away with that. There was nowhere for that space of Tantra to hold that. And I worry now, after 19 years, was that ethical? Because one of our ethics is around do no harm. And I feel that if you're providing something as a modality of healing, then you will need to pretty well make sure you take responsibility for what the practices you've offered have evoked in people. And this is why I developed this spiritual inquiry method, because a key feature of the work that we offer, we put you through, put people through intense practices that bring stuff up, and we spend a amount of time, good chunk of time, processing and making sense, so that that can be reintegrated and kind of help that rest in people. Why that's useful for people with histories of sexual abuse is that you can learn a new thing or have a new experience, and then you've got the space to work it through and integrate it, rather than, you know, being left on your own.
And that's basically what we have been doing ever since.
Yes, that's a key feature. But I also don't know that everybody that teaches Tantra is offering that. And I think that's a beautiful thing in Tantra, that there are different people doing Tantra differently. It's not a regulated practice. But I know for you and me, it's been massively, well, not even massively, the backbone of our work has been the psychotherapeutic holding for the for what's come up through people doing the tantric processes. And we know, Ingo, you know, over decades of doing that, that the benefit, how that's really supported people.
Well, and that I need to disclose, you know, that psychotherapeutic holding comes through you, because you are the psychotherapist in the room. And I'm incredibly grateful what I learned from you, but it's almost still now to this day is like when really hardcore
content
of sexual abuse comes up in a participant. I mainly give it to you, because that is your domain as a psychotherapist, whereas my domain would be more in the spiritual realm, and maybe, you know, do you see what I mean?
But I also feel in recent years people love both of our perspectives.
Oh, absolutely. They're just they complement each other. Yeah. But what I am saying is that if you want to teach Tantra and really invite these topics really into the room, you know, through people who have gone through that, then it's actually important for a for a specialized psychotherapist almost to be in the room, and you've got that.
I wonder if we've given enough time to this topic. I feel like the time has whizzed by. But I think what we're also offering in today is really an invitation around, you know, if the way that you and I talk about Tantra speaks to you, dear listener, then we have an absolute invitation for you to come and join us for a very special Tantra retreat called Healing and Surrender. Healing being a lot of what we're talking about today. And surrender being another aspect of healing, and also holding power.
Going through a very, very wide range of experiences, especially during that retreat, experiences that are very, very hard to be had in so-called normal life, and then see how can I actually relearn many things about sex in my life.
And also about doing more work in healing. We also use in this retreat, we explore how the arse anus is a portal into cathartic release as part of a process of healing. And the surrender part, we've modernized it. So when we explore surrender and holding power, it's in a way that's very pertinent to our community. You know, very pertinent to our community. So a very beautiful, deep, transformative retreat. When is it? What's the date, Singo?
it starts on Saturday, the 30th of November, 2024.
Thank you.
And goes for 7 days, six nights, until the Friday, the 6th of December, 2024. Yep.
And it happens
in Glastonbury.
Well, I would say the sacred landscape of Glastonbury.
Yes, just in a very beautiful retreat center outside of Glastonbury. And if you're in England, you know where that is, in the southwest. If you come in from Europe or the US, it's quite easy to get there from London Heathrow Airport.
It is. Ingo, thank you. That's felt like quite a lot to talk about today. That's felt quite personal and emotional, but I really wanted us to share that and to, I guess, share my own personal journey.
Incredibly
of
beautiful.
You know, what I've experienced and how Tantra has helped in service to you, dear listeners, that this could show you a potential path. Ingo, thank you for being here today and holding me in all of that. I love you.
I love you, my darling.
I love you too, sweetheart. And yeah, we'll see you on the next podcast.
See Take you next care. Time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So that's the end of today's podcast. I hope that has been really useful to you. It's been quite a deep and moving podcast this time. If you're interested to hear more about the retreat that we're holding at the end of November, early December, you can get details of that at our website, tantraforgaymen.com. And we look forward to seeing you in the next episode, episode 16. Until then, take care. Lots of love to you. Bye-bye.